What is up, Level Up Nation? Welcome to episode 166 of the Level Up Podcast, your home for gaming and esports news, brought to you by the Overtime Network. My name is John, and I am joined once again by the king of the quarantine, Joey. What's up, buddy?
John, I am going freaking stir crazy over here. As someone who's extroverted, I think the fact that I'm not getting to hang out with people in person is like draining my energy levels. So I'm waking up, I feel like I don't have enough sleep. I get a hop on some games here and there, which is nice, but this whole telecommuting thing is harder than I thought it to be.
You're an extrovert?
Oh yeah, 100%. Yeah. I draw so much energy from being around people, I can't get any by myself.
Yeah, like are we on the same level of extrovertedness?
I think you're on the level of very loud personality. I am not a loud personality.
Well, if you want to follow Joey's personality, make sure to follow him on Twitter at CourtsideKing and myself at Fiasco. And while you're at it, you're already listening to the show. You might be watching here live on Twitch. Make sure you follow the show on social media as well. Twitter, Instagram, and Facebook at the Level Up Podcast. That's at the LVLUP Podcast. Yeah, you can follow all the shenanigans and Joey's extreme extrovertedness, if we're going to say that's a word today.
I think we're jumping to the end of the line here, John. I'm extroverted, but not extreme.
Extremely extroverted. So much it makes me an introvert. Joey, after they're done following us on social media and following the show on social media, I have one more thing I want to ask our listeners. And of course, that's to leave us a review on your podcatcher of choice. If you do listen to the podcast on one of the many podcatchers out there, Spotify, Stitcher, iTunes, and Google Play, we would be honored if you left us a review, a 4 out of 5, a 5 out of 5, if you're really feeling awesome. These ratings and reviews do go a long way to help grow listeners and grow our community. And we would appreciate you taking a small moment out of your day, leaving us some cool, kind words out there. You know, I mean, we're all kind of locked up. We're not going anywhere. So be nice. You know, we're all stuck inside. You might as well. So, Nation, we've talked about it a little bit before. The world's kind of in a weird place at the moment. Esports has been disrupted. Traditional sports have been disrupted. But luckily enough, esports are trying to get back into gear here. And speaking of gear, Joey, we touched on it a little bit last week, but it happened again this past week. And of course, I'm talking about iRacing, virtual NASCAR, something that I constantly make fun of. They had another huge weekend, and I have a feeling that's just going to be one of many topics on this week's episode of Level Up Podcast. Joey, what else are we talking about this week on episode 166?
Right on, John. iNASCAR, iRacing, it is all jumping into sixth gear. It feels like everything is going so fast with that esport. On top of that, we have Tribe Gaming, who's a mobile gaming esport organization. They raise a ton of money and have some big names now in their corner. We have a lot of other stuff coming from FunPlus Phoenix. The LOL World Champions are now jumping into CSGO. After a few little hiccups here and there, they are finally into the scene. We have new VR headsets being made. We have new education being available in Minecraft and much, much more.
All right, Joey, so we have our topics. It sounds like it's another action-packed episode of Level Up Podcast. So before we even jump headfirst into these amazing topics, I know I'm going to need a little assistance. It is still a Monday. It's the only downside of recording these shows on a Monday is that it's always a Monday, and we have to deal with Mondays in our own unique ways, if you will. Of course, our way here at the Level Up Podcast is by the drink of choice segment. So, Joey, for the 166th time, it's a tongue twister today, Joey. Your beverage of choice, please.
John, I am going with some Woodford Reserve bourbon. It's been a classic lately. I'm just hoping it brings me energy tonight. Like one of the things I've noticed more, which is really weird too, coffee for some reason slows me down. I don't know why, but it does not stimulate me. Alcohol on the other side, I don't really get that depressant effect. I kind of get a bit more energy. So I'm hoping sipping on this a little bit is going to bring some of that energy back.
Joey, you and I both graduated college from the same university. And I have a feeling we took a lot of the same classes, considering we have our degrees in the exact same area. I don't remember ever once alcohol giving me energy to wake up and feel good. Normally it's I want to pass out cold and just sleep for the next 4 days, but I sleep terribly because, you know, you're drunk and you're hungover. But we're not going to go down. Joey, you do you. If your bourbon gives you energy, more power to you, sir. I'm not having water this time, so you can be proud of me. I am having, because it's all the craze right now, a Natty Light Seltzer This is the House Rules. It is a strawberry and kiwi Natty Light seltzer. It's actually really good. Shout out to Matt and Nikki, two good friends of mine that introduced this to me. Natty Light, a beer I have not drank since freshman year of college, and let's not talk about that night. I would rather talk about the amazing topics we have on episode 166. So, Joey, I don't want to waste any more time about bad decisions made in college. I want to talk about some gaming and e-sports news. Let's go.
We are off to quite the night already. I can feel it. Mobile esport organization Tribe Gaming. Many of you know them. I feel like they originally made their name in a few different esport titles. Vainglory being one of those big ones, that mobile MOBA, really, that was out there. It was a 3v3 circuit for the longest time. Then they went 5v5. They tried to take on League of Legends, Dota 2. It's not quite happening, but Tribe Gaming still doing well over there. On top of that, they're into some Supercell games, Clash Royale, Clash of Clans, some of those big name games out there on the mobile platform. So they're doing well for themselves. And John, they're doing really well now. They raised $1 million. And on top of that, that's huge, but the partners they brought in are even bigger, in my opinion. They brought in the NBA's Gordon Hayward, very well known for his outspokenness in the League of Legends community. He's a huge player over there. He even does his own streaming. WWE's Cesaro is coming in as well, and mobile gaming veteran Christian Siegerstrahle. So a lot of big names coming in for Tribe Gaming, $1 million coming in for Tribe Gaming, and already an successful organization when it comes to mobile esports.
Absolutely huge. And now the spotlight they're getting with some of these major names. Gordon Hayward, definitely the biggest name here. And Joey, I think you hit the nail on the head here. Gordon Hayward's his ability to connect with the League of Legends community and still be a part of the NBA, it's that awkward crossover, but it's something we constantly see more and more almost on a daily basis, especially over the past 3-4 years when it's become more socially acceptable to be considered a gamer, is a lot of pro athletes are gamers. A lot of them stream on the side. Washington Nationals shortstop Trey Turner streams on Caffeine. I don't know why he chose Caffeine. I don't think there's a deal there. I did research and I don't see anything there. But, you know, there's other players in baseball that do it. Some big names in music. Drake also streams himself playing video games. So it's really big when you get that kind of crossover. And just real quick, kind of side note here on Gordon Hayward. He was recently asked on one of his live streams which community is more toxic, League of Legends or the NBA. Hands down, he said League of Legends. And he goes, if people heckled the way League of Legends players heckle your own teammates in the NBA, it'd be like, oh, you missed a three-point shot, and your teammate would be like, best three-point shooter NA, let's go, boys. Thought it was pretty funny.
Yeah, guys, if you haven't heard that or read that article, it is definitely worth checking out. Gordon Hayward keeps it real. Huge League of Legends fan, like we said, but he definitely sees that negative side even as a popular player. Maybe he even gets it more, John, because they recognize him in-game. But yeah, League of Legends community, tons of fun to play the game. The community can be a little iffy here and there. I recommend duo queuing or bringing even more friends in. 4 or 5, a lot less toxicity. Unless you're playing with Fiasco, then he'll poke you a little bit, but it's all out of fun.
I am not as toxic as I used to be. I am reformed, Joey. Reformed.
Yes, reformed Fiasco 1. But, I mean, you have fun with it. We have fun when we play together. We'll poke each other. Hey, John, nice miscue or whatever. But it's just fun. It's light. Some of these people that you play with online, though, I feel like they take it to the next level. It's like you're killing their family if you end up missing one CS. It's some people just take it way, way too far. But yeah, Gordon Hayward has admitted it. He said the NBA is much less toxic than League of Legends, but it's still a great game if you want to dive on in. Just do it with maybe mute all. CSGO, after a deal for the Heroic roster ended up falling through, this is a pretty popular CSGO team out there. It's obviously not a Team Liquid, a Cloud9, a Fnatic, but at the same point, Heroic is one of those rosters that's done pretty well. Fun plus Phoenix being the LOL World Champions. They bring in a lot of cash from that, and now they're looking at spending it. They're looking at expanding their name, jumping into other esports titles, CSGO being a giant one out there that is still continuing to grow to this day, even being 10-plus years old. The Heroic deal fell through. There were some fishy things that went on. Not many details came out about it, but Fun plus Phoenix is still wanting to buy in, and they found a roster. They were going with Bad News Bears, not to be confused with that old movie that came out in the MLB. But this is exciting. I think this is a good roster as well. I don't know if I label them maybe top 30 in my book. We'd have to ask some people that follow that lower end of the CSGO seen a little bit better than I do, but I don't think they're a top 20 roster. They're definitely not a top 10 roster, but I think they are a good enough roster that has that youth potential where they could come in as a younger player roster, they could get some more experience, they could take down maybe a veteran team or two, and then from there, a few roster moves or maybe this roster itself, as they synergize more and more, they can continue to climb up that ladder. And with that, John, they will also be moving into Phase 2 of Flashpoint Season 1. So they are joining that a bit later with this acquisition. They're going to be able to participate in that big Flashpoint season, and that's the one run by a ton of esports talent like Monte Cristo's over there. I don't know if Doa has been officially announced, but he'll probably be involved. Thorin is over there as well. So a ton of big names. The competition itself is a little on the lighter end. It's really Cloud9 versus the world over there. I would be stunned if Cloud9 does not win the whole thing, because a lot of the bigger name organizations in CSGO ended up going with a different league at the same point. But this is a franchise league, so a lot of eyes are on it. A lot of people are wanting to see how it develops. And with FunPlus having that name globally, now trying to expand that brand, I think this is a good roster to do it with. And being in Flashpoint, there's definitely win potential there outside of that C9 matchup.
Yeah, Flashpoint definitely, when you compare the two newer CSGO leagues out there, Flashpoint, you know, it's I don't want to call them the weaker of the two, but when you really look at the organizations that have bought in, it really is lacking those big star names. You know, time will tell whether, you know, giving some of these smaller organizations and medium tier organizations the ability to breathe a little bit to go up against a juggernaut that is Cloud9 in this case for Flashpoint, you know, will they be able to develop into powerhouse names? Will they be able to go up against the other league that has these massive names all over it? Only time will tell, and that's kind of a gamble that a lot of teams are taking with Flashpoint, being that a lot of these organizations feel like they'll have a better opportunity to win instead of going up against your juggernauts like Fnatic or Astralis, like right from the get go. You know, your in-game boss, if you will, is Cloud9. Cloud9, a great organization in CSGO. They've kind of fallen from grace after their Boston Major win a couple years ago, but still, even then, they're still a really good team. So for Flashpoint, think of it like almost like a developmental league, almost, but I still feel time will tell us really if Flashpoint is a second-tier CSGO league in comparison. But for now, I like this. Fun plus Phoenix making a lot of moves for themselves, you know, they're doing quite well in other titles. Believe it or not, they're doing it. They're doing quite well. So I like this acquisition. I like them coming to Flashpoint. I feel like this is an opportunity for them to grow as an organization as well, and for Flashpoint to kind of expand their reach too.
Right. I'd have to agree on a lot of those points. And I think the one thing, we got to be careful with the way we talk about Flashpoint, because you and I see it. If we look at the organizations, they are a tier below some of the other CSGO leagues out there that are looking at franchising. At the same point, if you look at the talent, if you look at the broadcast, if you look at anything talent-related in the sense of casting or producing, they are on a much higher level than a lot of the other CSGO tournaments and leagues out there. So the production value is going to be huge. The teams playing are going to be a little lower quality, and I think that's where the big stuff comes in here. In a sense, I don't want to compare it to the NFL versus the XFL, but it almost is starting to feel like that. Like, you have this unique production coming from Flashpoint, but the teams are not the quality of the major league that you have the top 10 teams in as well. So in a sense, they kind of fall into that. They're not necessarily a minor league versus major league, but it's two leagues that have a very different level of talent in two different areas. So it's going to be interesting to see how it all plays out. This is the first season starting up. It was supposed to start in March/April. Some stuff has happened, some stuff has not, due to COVID-19 and the whole breakout and how things are being moved online and how things are being shifted to later dates. And we're still seeing how all of that ends up impacting the franchising of these two leagues. But overall, I feel like they both have the potential to be successful. And for these lower-end teams, or let's say not top-end teams like the Bad News Bears, I think this is going to be a great league, like you said, John, to develop, to play against some of that higher-tier youth talent that we see eventually going on to these top-tier rosters like a Cloud9. So I'm curious to see how it all plays out. I think it's something that we're not going to have an answer to anytime soon. It's going to be something that we have to see how it plays out over the next couple months, how that talent develops, how the franchising plays out, and all of that later down the road. Bad Boys. This next section is interesting. So it comes up here and there from time to time in esports. There's some players that will end up taking some kind of drugs to further enhance their ability. There'll be other players who try to script, or other players who are super toxic online and they get bans for it. These ones in particular are a bit more serious. The Boston Uprising player Mufin, or Muffin, I believe is how it's pronounced. I've honestly not followed Boston Uprising all that much, but he has been accused of several sexual misconduct allegations, some of those against minors. Sexual misconduct in any way is not a good thing to be accused of. It's not a good thing to do either, obviously. With this being minors as well, it even escalates it to another level. So the team is looking into the allegations. He will be sitting all matches until they figure out how that's all going to play out. They need to do their own investigation as a league and as a team, as well as obviously the people involved on the state level or city level, whoever is investigating that as well. So there's a lot of different things that have come out about it. I'm not going to mention her name, but one streamer stepped forward at the beginning. She ended up talking about some of the stuff that happened, and because she stood out, a lot of other people have come out of the woodwork as well. There's pluses and minuses to that. Some people feel empowered by one person coming out, and they feel like they can come out as well. At the same point, you also start to get some false claims as well, potentially, because one person stood out, and now other people want to jump onto the suits and claims as well. So, again, a lot going on here. Not 100% sure how it's going to play out. Sexual misconduct in no way is a good thing, and let's try not to do that out there, gamers, esport athlete or not. It is not good, even harassing people in an online game like League of Legends. If you're being toxic to Gordon Hayward, if you're being toxic to the other sex, it's just not a good thing, guys. So go ahead and get that together, but for now, we'll follow Muffin. Anything else you want to say on that one, John?
Yeah, so, you know, if I'm Boston Uprising, look, I'm going to have to be very blunt with you. This is your second player in 3 years to have been accused of this. Dream Caspers being the first in 2018 when Overwatch League first launched. A member of Boston Uprising was accused of the exact same thing. I'm going to be completely honest. I haven't kept up with the story. I have no desire to keep up with the story. I see right now, I just went back on Twitter. He is back and active on Twitter. So not quite sure what happened in that case, but he was accused of the exact same thing. Now Boston Uprising, 2 years later, after that first incident with Dream Caspers, you now have another player. Here's my question to you, Boston Uprising, as an organization. What are you doing to fix this problem? What training are you providing your players? Look, let's be real here. Overwatch League is a $25 million buy-in to this league. There is an investor, an organization somewhere that has dropped $25 million to own a team in this franchise league. They are paying you a pretty penny to play a video game. You are living every kid's wildest dream, being a pro video game athlete, an esport pro. A lot of people look up to you. It comes with power. And let's be real here. You're getting a bunch of 16, 17, 18, 19, and 20-year-olds being thrust into the limelight with zero training on how to handle the pressures, how to handle being looked up to as a role model, to handle this new platform they have. Let's be real here. You have a platform. You're verified on social media platforms. You have thousands and thousands of people following you. Your word means a lot to these people. And sometimes people don't know how to handle it. Again, not making excuses. That's just the reality. A lot of people don't know how to understand their newfound fame. That's where the organization needs to step in and provide this training, whether it's sexual harassment training, whether it's, you know, basic fundamentals 101 training. The organization needs to step in and do something. You have other organizations in traditional sports that do this. They provide media training. They provide financial training. They provide life training. That's what esports needs to move to. And in Boston Uprising, two players in 3 years. That is developing into something that I don't think you want to be labeled on your organization. That is not cool. You now have two players accused of sexual misconduct with minors. That is a huge, huge issue that you as an organization need to look inwards on and fix.
Right, and I definitely think as a full organization, Boston Uprising, as well as some of the other Boston organizations represented by this, all the way up to the owner, actually, in this one, there's been claims here and there throughout this organization, and again, this one just being one of the more recent ones with Muffin here, the Boston Uprising, it definitely needs to be looked into. I don't know, you don't want to be down to the point where you're tracking players like we see with some governments out there. At the same point, you need to have some kind of behavioral guidelines in check. It shouldn't be coming to this, like you said, John. Two players now. I believe they had one in season one, and now they have one in this season as well. So season two was at least clean from what we know. At the same point, you never know if this continues to be a claim after claim. Again, it could be an individual player thing, but with two of them and two of the most well-known ones coming from the same organization, it does raise a few more flags than usual. Another player in trouble, this one for a very different crime. We have Rogue Warriors jungler Wei Yan being released due to accusations and allegations of match fixing during the LPL Spring 2020 competitions. It's also sounding like he's going to get a 24-month ban as well from the leagues itself. So he'll not be able to be in any Riot-sanctioned competition for 24 months. We're talking 2 years. 2 years does not sound like a very long time in a lot of different things. We're talking esports. Your prime is so short. It might be 5 to 7 years unless you're SOAS. Like, you are not going to have that much time over there to continue to compete at that highest level. So you pretty much end your career very close come to it with a move like this.
Yeah, and the worst part about it is match fixing is something that's not new to esports, unfortunately. It's been around since the start of esports and LAN competitions. You have people cheating, throwing games for whatever bets or for bookies or for whatever reasons. And, you know, it takes place in traditional sports, too, but it's something that kind of has held esports back from becoming more legitimate in the public eye. So it is unfortunate. I do applaud Riot, though. Riot's usually pretty swift and stern in their punishments when it comes to match fixing. That is one thing Riot has done incredibly well, is bringing down the ban hammer, if you will, to players who participate in match fixing or throwing or whatever kind of illicit activities that happen in game to give a competitive edge to the other team or throw for your team. So I like this for Riot. It's a smart move to ban him for 2 years. 2 years is a long time, Joey. Just like you said, your career in esports is so incredibly short that 2 years is the difference between that 16-year-old kid that's up and coming who's a master's in League of Legends right now to him becoming 18 and eligible to play in your position, and he's more mechanically gifted than you are, and you're now 26, 27, and you're on your way out. So, 2 years is massive, and it's well-deserved for match fixing.
Well, and especially with something like the LPL, too, where players move so quickly from academy-level teams up to the main line. The LPL, as well as the LCK over in South Korea, continue to shuffle players here and there. They want that top-tier talent. They want to find the next Faker. They want to find the next BDD. They want to continue to find these top-level players as quickly as they can before these other organizations do. You make one misstep like this, and we've seen it before in the LPL, one misstep like this puts you out for a year or two, and you are completely done. There's very little chance you'll find your way back into the main scene. It's unfortunate for him. At the same point, I think the crime writes itself. If you're going to be match fixing, if you're going to be potentially throwing games here, it's not a good look. People get banned in game for it as regular players. People in the pro league get even more severe consequences like we saw here with the 2-year ban. I think it's definitely deserved in this case. At the same point, I feel bad for the guy. It's spring 2020. The split has been off and on because of the virus over there in China. It feels like it's not really a serious split for a lot of these teams and a lot of these players. A lot of the players' associations even voted on passing up the spring split because they feel like it's been so misshapen due to the virus canceling competitions here and there and then moving things online and then bringing them back and then moving things again. And it's been so back and forth for a lot of these pro leagues that a lot of the pros are not 100% in it. At the same point, you cannot be match fixing. You cannot be throwing games. You cannot be betting on these games. Just because you might not be able to play out these games for your full salary does not mean you can do illegal things to go ahead and make it up. It's just not a good way to go about things. Obviously, a 2-year ban coming in here, very, very big. That's like a career gone practically. It's sad to see. But again, the crime writes itself. Moving over to partnerships and investments, this one a little bit more exciting, not as bad news as good news. We have HP, Valve, and Microsoft teaming up to build a next-gen VR headset. This is potentially the HP Reverb G2. I'm somewhat excited for this, John. VR is still something that makes me very nervous. Not nervous in the sense that I'm afraid to play it. Nervous in the sense that we keep seeing places close down. Sony closed like 3 or 4 VR-dedicated studios before they even launched games this past year. We have a number of VR titles and VR headsets not selling. Now, one thing that does give me hope is the new Half-Life game. The Half-Life game that came out in March sold a ton of Valve headsets. It sold very well as the game. It has tons of hype behind it. It could be what we need to continue to move VR forward. Right now, it feels like VR in the gaming space is just a bit too expensive. Not enough people can afford PCs to run it. Not enough people can afford the VR equipment to run it as well. Not many people want to invest in that because they're used to either playing on a controller or playing keyboard and mouse. So We've seen some hybrids come out. You and I have been working with one company that's done a lot in the stabilization realm as well for VR, and I think there's a lot of good strides being made in the VR industry. I think this could be another big stride with a new VR headset, especially coming from people like Valve, who have found a ton of success in the space, Microsoft, who's found a lot of success in the AR space, and then HP. I think this could be a winner, but again, with it being VR, with so many question marks still out there, I am very nervous about it.
Yeah, the biggest thing is that gatekeeping aspect of that price point. Now you have three major players in the VR world and in the game world and just the computer production and component production world with HP in there and Microsoft, is that these organizations want to make money. They're not going to make a product that is going to be $50 that's going to be able to run these games that took millions of dollars to create. I just don't see that happening. That price point of VR, I don't see that dropping to a reasonable point or becoming efficient enough to run on a non-gaming computer efficiently for the average Joe to want to go buy a VR and plug it up to his laptop or plug it up to his home PC computer that's running an i3 or an i5, you know, from four generations ago, with, you know, a built-in graphics card to the motherboard and not an, you know, an external graphics card that's, you know, slid into the motherboard. So there's just a lot of things that is really holding VR back. That price point, the power that it needs. I mean, VR right now is still a $1,000 plus investment, and it's tough. I'm gonna be curious to see if they're gonna be able to make this new headset cost efficient for the consumer, and also maybe do what we saw with the Nintendo Switch, have a light version of it, something that costs $100, $200 less than the Pro model or the standard gaming model, that opens the doors for other people to experience your product. And maybe they find the value in that, and maybe the next go around they upgrade to the full model or the Pro model, and they see that their investment into that first step into the VR realm is worth a further investment later on down the road. That's the hesitation a lot of people have, is the gatekeeping of it for the price point. Is, do I want to make that financial commitment to VR that really hasn't blown up? And companies have been trying VR since the 90s. There was a gaming system called the VR Boy, I believe. It was like all over Walmart or something. I'm pretty sure you can Google it and find out, but it was this like awful VR headset. But the whole thing was, it was supposed to be virtual reality. It never took off. It was awful. It was a waste of money. It was a waste of research and production and development. And they've never been able to get it to the point where the public has bought in. And we're still there. The graphics have come around. The engines have come around. But overall, it's still not being openly accepted by gamers and the rest of the world. That's going to be the big thing, is that price point.
100% agree, John. And I think one thing that's going to be telling, if you look at these three companies, Microsoft is obviously the biggest of the three by far. I want to see the price point of the new Xbox. Are we going to see this super-powered Xbox be at a competitive price with Sony? Or are they going to leave it very high because it's a more powerful console? I think that is going to be the big telling point for this new VR headset as well. If it's going to be the best of the best, if it's going to be the best in the business, are we going to have to pay another $100 to $150, maybe even $200 to get this headset compared to one of the other headsets on the market? If that's the case, I don't see this doing well. Now, if Microsoft decides to bite the bullet here with Valve and HP, maybe undercut the price a bit to make it competitive with some of the other VR headsets currently on the market, maybe even less expensive, just to get it into people's hands, to get it connected to their PCs and consoles, then I think this could end up being the next big step for VR that starts to move it forward as an industry. So I think the biggest thing here, regardless of tech, is going to come down to the price point. Is this more affordable for the regular household? Speaking of Xbox, head of Xbox Phil Spencer has announced the addition of a new education category in Minecraft in the marketplace there. It's going to house a free education content for players, parents, and teachers to download. John, I am stoked about this. I am not a Minecraft player. I think it's fascinating to see everything that people build in there. The graphics, I like me some 16-bit graphics when it comes to like Mario. Not the biggest fan of it when it comes to Minecraft. I think I want that more realism with the grassy look and all of that. at the same point, it is fascinating to see how the creativity comes to life in Minecraft, as well as a number of other games out there like Roblox as well. This one in particular. So with education being suspended, with education being moved online for a lot of people in affected areas by COVID-19 and the coronavirus, we're starting to see a lot of people move to webinars, moving to online Blackboard assignments and different things like that. This is now an alternative. This is instead of saying, hey, look at your teacher through this webcam and listen to a lessons plan. Instead of looking at this assignment on some kind of post board and answering it, this is a new alternative to jump in there for those tech-savvy teachers or tech-savvy parents. It's going to allow players to explore the International Space Station through a partnership with NASA. It's going to allow them to code robots in different types of coding environments. They're going to be able to visit famous landmarks. I believe Washington, D.C. was mentioned, to go see stuff near the National Mall and all those famous American culture monuments, as well as, I'm sure, some worldwide as well. Dive into marine biology and much, much more. John, I'm not a Minecraft player, but I'm honestly really considering downloading this because I think this is one of the coolest partnerships in the education field to date.
For sure. You know, Minecraft has really been expanding the possibilities of what a sandbox-style game can do. Minecraft has been pushing boundaries. It is a game that pretty much an entire generation grew up on. That I'm talking about Generation Z, the Zoomers out there. It's a game that has taught them a lot. And Joey, you know, a lot of people in the OTN community and on our Discord play Minecraft, and we've been able to see some of the amazing things they've been able to do with Minecraft, some of the buildings they've been able to design, the systems they've come up with to manufacture goods or, essentially build factories to, like, produce coal or, you know, create farms or housing. Like, just it's endless possibilities. And also, Joey, they teach us things from time to time. Just like the other day, you learned what a creeper was. I thought that was pretty good. You finally discovered the world of creepers. But it's such a unique game, and it allows kids, adults, just anyone who plays it, to open up their imagination and kind of experience a new world and realize that same kind of creativity that you can put into Minecraft, you can put into the real world and discover and unlock new opportunities in life through what you learn on Minecraft. I think this is another great opportunity for Minecraft, expanding into the education category, if you will, to kind of experience different areas of the world, from the International Space Station to famous landmarks. You know, I remember when Google Earth came out years ago, it was something that it was so cool because you could see the Eiffel Tower in 3D from the street view. And it was almost like you were there. Like, wow, you know, I may never get the chance to go to Paris, but here I am being able to kind of experience, you know, the Eiffel Tower, you know, right there in front of me. You know, it was cool. It's unique. It's a way to sightsee without spending thousands of dollars to travel. So I think this is really cool for Minecraft. I'm really, really excited to see what comes next with Xbox, Microsoft, and Minecraft going forward in the future.
And outside of the educational content in and of itself, I think one of the other cooler points is allowing teachers or parents to connect with students in a video game. I mean, this is one thing where Minecraft is one of the most popular games in the world. I believe it's number two on most people's charts, as far as statistically speaking. So this is one of those games that people can come to and connect with those students on that level. Maybe a teacher cannot connect in the classroom as easily, but now that they're in Minecraft, they're walking students around, or maybe a parent is taking that interest. Oh my gosh, my son designed all of this by himself in Minecraft. Like, I think there's so many possibilities on that relationship level as well to maybe deepen that relationship as an instructor or as a guardian, as a parent of these different children, and try to connect with them on a different level as well. So besides all of the amazing partnerships that are going to come from this educational section, I think the relationship building can be a great plus as well. Over to game publishing, John. This one is, I don't think it's going to be controversial, but it brings up a lot of interesting points as far as game publishing in general. And this is with Epic Games and the Epic Games Store. So Epic Games recently announced Epic Games Publishing. It's going to already show partnerships with Gen Design, which is the developer of Last Guardian, Playdead, which designed Limbo and Inside, both extremely popular games, Remedy with Quantum Break and Control, which was up for Game of the Year this past year. The big things behind this deal. This, to me, is very similar to what we see with Xbox Game Studios, except Microsoft is buying these studios outright and then moving into some of these points. Epic, on the other side, is saying these studios can keep 100% of their creative content, but we are going to be the ones publishing and the ones funding behind it. So some interesting points here. Developers are going to retain 100% of all intellectual property and full creative control over their work. 100%. Epic Games Publishing will cover up to 100%. That is a big key word in the way the statement's read. Up to 100%. Not 100% guaranteed. Up to 100% of development costs from developer salaries to go-to-market expenses. So that can be anything from like boxing the titles, marketing, all these different aspects that go to finally launching your game. And then once costs are recouped, developers earn at least 50% of all profits. So they can be over 50%, but they will be guaranteed at least 50% once things are recouped. So Epic Games gets 100% of their money back first, and then developers can make 50% of money on top of that, at least 50%. So a few big things to break down here. One, 100% of intellectual property, John. I think that is a big deal. That's huge for developers. The fact that Epic Games is going to cover all their development costs is big as well. One of the big things for me, though, is this cost being recouped. So this means Epic Games has to make everything back, salary-wise, marketing-wise, all of these different costs before the developers make more on top of their game.
That is a big break from what we currently see, where, you know, there's like a 70-30 split or an 80-20 split when it comes to, you know, developers retaining, you know, rights or fees or income or profits or whatever. Joey, I'm going to be honest. I can understand Epic Games' side of this, saying, hey, look, we're essentially going to help you get this game out. We're going to do everything in our power, being the powerhouse that is Epic Games, to make sure your title gets out to the millions of people using, you know, our game engine, our gaming library catalog or store, whatever you want to call it. And we're going to use what we have from what we've built with Fortnite, and we're going to push that forward on our name. And yeah, I mean, I could see how Epic sees that as them taking on that risk. And part of that risk is, okay, cool, we're going to front everything, and then once we get our money back, then you make 50% back from your game. I can understand that from Epic Games' side. As a developer, that makes me nervous. I mean, if it takes 3 months for Epic to get their money back, then you start making money on your game 3 months down the road. If it takes 3 years, that's 3 years of no income from a title you pour your heart and soul and time, time of your life that you won't get back into for 3 years. That's a very interesting deal. That it's a big gamble. If you watch Shark Tank on TV, this feels like a Shark Tank deal. It's like, okay, you know, I want 50% of your company, and I'm going to give you $3 million, and I want a 5% royalty on everything until I get my money back, and then you get everything else. It's like, that's a big gamble. That's a very, very big gamble. I'm kind of torn on this one, Joey, because I can understand both sides.
Yeah, it's one of those Mr. Wonderful deals, yes, going at the Shark Tank type of thing. I mean, it's interesting in the sense that I think this might be the best deal out there for a lot of these current like third-party publishing companies or third-party developers looking for a publisher company. I mean, when you look at the way Microsoft is approaching things, who I think is the cleanest up until this point, Microsoft is buying studios outright. So the studio is getting all their salaries paid. They're making the benefits that come from selling their game, but they do not own those creative rights anymore because the studio itself is owned by Microsoft. So Microsoft is going to retain, in a sense, those intellectual developments. If the studio were to split off later down the line, Microsoft keeps all those intellectual developments. With this deal, they keep their IPs. They keep all of the stuff associated with the IPs, all the trademarks associated with the IPs, all of that. But again, their salaries, and this is iffy to me, because it sounds like Epic Games will cover up to 100%. Well, what if they don't think the game's going to do that well? Maybe they only cover 50%. So then where does the rest of that salary come from while you're developing this game? That, to me, is one of the biggest nervous points outside of this waiting for 50% to be recouped first. So I like it. I think Epic Games is trying to say, hey, Steam, we're going to continue to up this deal and make it better and better for developers out there so that they have this publishing option out there. At the same point, if I'm a studio, I would much rather be bought out completely by Microsoft or Sony. Yes, I don't own the intellectual rights, but I am carefree. I have my full salary paid for. I have the support of Microsoft's cloud services behind me or Sony's development industry-wide throughout the world. I mean, when you look at Microsoft, they are very powerful with Windows. They have a ton of cloud computing space. They're one of the most popular companies in the world. When you look at Sony, their outreach is huge. They had so much entertainment outreach worldwide, especially over in Asia, with the different stuff as far as TVs and as far as cell devices and many, many electronic devices, even outside of video games. So Microsoft or Sony has so much reach. And yes, Epic has Fortnite. Everyone loves their Fortnite, and it is very popular, extremely well played throughout the world. But at the same point, is that enough to really give developers a leg up? Yes, you get 100% of the intellectual development qualities, but you might not get 100% of your salary, and you might not make any money off your game until, like John said, 3 months, 6 months, even later down the line, if even. So there's a lot of things to weigh out for developers. But again, this one is one they can approach. With Microsoft and Sony, they almost have to be approached in a sense. So it's a bit more exclusive with those two deals. I like that Epic Games is at least allowing another option out there in the wild for developers to look at. But again, there are downsides. There are pros and cons to each of these deals.
You know, with Epic Games, just, I don't want to beat a dead horse too much. Epic Games kind of has, like, they're kind of in a gray area right now when it comes to gaming. The gaming community is not totally bought in. Some of the deals that they have out there, the exclusive deals that they're trying to pull, like, we all remember the Rocket League deal. You know, it's like, okay, yeah, it's still being supported on Steam, but now it's essentially an Epic Games title that's being completely controlled by Epic Games. You know, there's the whole thing of, oh, the Epic Games version is going to continue to get updates while Steam might get an update every once in a while. You know, Epic Games is kind of sitting here like they're putting this out. It's like, hey, look, you can retain 100% of your intellectual property. Like, hey, you know, we're the good guys over here. Come join us, you know. But then there's a stipulation when it comes to the actual money. That's the downside. Like, again, like, I can understand Epic Games' standpoint here, but if you're a developer, again, we said it before, we'll say it again, it's a huge gamble. And Joey, I agree with you 100%. I would rather be bought out by a Microsoft and, you know, or a larger gaming studio that will see through to this idea, and possibly I even retain a job, you know, being the producer of this game. I still have full control over this game I came up with, but now it's being backed and bought out by a Microsoft or a Sony or another large studio out there, you know, and I have a little bit more creative freedom and a bigger budget to kind of do what I need to do. And I'm getting paid at the same time versus this question mark of when will I see money? When will I see revenue from this time, this passion, my art that I created with Epic Games?
Right, and how long do people get paid, and how many people get paid for that long? Like, do they just pay you up to 100% until your game ships? Or what if you have a title like a Bleeding Edge that just recently came out from Microsoft, and a lot of that is going to be live service, where we have characters added down the road and new maps added down the road? Does everyone get paid through that time of this live service game, or is it just until it's pushed out? At that point, you're done. There's just way too many question marks, way too many gray areas left with this. We'll have to keep an eye on that with Epic Games. I like the fact that we see more diversification in this area. I think more options for developers to look at in terms of publishing is never a bad thing, but this is definitely one you want to comb through before buying straight into. John, being a big Super Smash Brothers Ultimate player like yourself over there, the Fighter's Pass, we know all about that. That's their form of DLC, where Smash Brothers and Nintendo are adding new fighters via DLC payments. You can buy this pass outright. You can play to earn these players later down the road. There's all different aspects to this game, Super Smash Brothers. I'm not a big Smash player myself. I enjoyed the original on N64, but I haven't followed up too much with the title since then. I played a little bit of Brawl on GameCube too. But we do know the next character, the first one of this new season's Fighter Pass. It's going to be an exclusive fighter from ARMS. John, have you ever checked out ARMS?
I have not.
It's weird. I do not have ARMS myself, but if you go ahead and just give me a little Google search for that, it's pretty much, imagine Slinky, the little dog from Toy Story, and he is on someone's arms. Like, these arms are literally Slinkies. It's like a fighting game with Slinky arms. It is weird looking. I have not purchased this game, nor is it on my radar to be purchased, but I do enjoy the idea of trying to punch you with a Slinky arm, John.
Oh, that was overly violent for our show.
I mean, in a loving way, of course, just like our Toxicity and League, right?
In a loving way. Remember, guys and gals, Joey was the one that said that I was toxic, and he wants to punch me with a Slinky arm. Look at that.
Out of love.
Yeah, so I'm looking at a couple screenshots from the game. It it looks absurd. It's kind of interesting. I'd be kind of curious to see how a character with slinky arms fits into a Super Smash game. I think it's unique. I think it's different. It's not another, you know, Fire Emblem character. It's not another, you know, Pokemon. It's something different. So I applaud them for being a little different, you know, in this go around with bringing in something like an arms character. Yeah, I like it. It's unique. It's different.
It's unique. It's different. It's a way for Nintendo to promote their other games. Oh, Let's get serious
it
here.
Is.
I mean, when you're putting someone from Animal Crossing into the game, like a Zelda, I get. Zelda, Link, very popular title, makes sense. Mario, Luigi, Wario, it makes sense. Now you're looking at some of these titles like Splatoon. It has some popularity. It's not the most popular thing out there, to my knowledge. ARMS is another game, even less than Splatoon, that it doesn't have that popularity. But this is a way for Nintendo to say, hey, we have these other characters. We have these other IPs out there. Go ahead and check them out. Again, not an ARMS player myself. It looks interesting. Slinky ARMS is a unique concept in a sense. But what really makes all the fighters stand out, I don't know because I haven't played the game. At the same point, I think this is a great way for Nintendo to self-promote themselves, but also to make different deals. We see Banjo-Kazooie coming in recently. I think that's a great deal. We have Joker from Persona coming in. There's some very unique characters coming in from other franchises. But again, Nintendo likes to promote their own stuff here and there. We saw a lot of it with Mario Tennis as well. This is another one of those promotions. I don't know how I feel about it yet. I'm just curious who the character is going to be and what the kit's going to look like. Chad is good times over there tonight. Let's move into NASCAR, John, because you have panned virtual NASCAR many times about a year ago. You were not a big fan of NASCAR. You put it right up there with some John Deere esports events in the farmer area.
Yeah, you would.
NASCAR's iRacing, John, how many people did it pull in? It pulled in 900,000 viewers for Fox Sports, making it the most watched esport event in U.S. TV history. Again, it didn't beat out a lot of the Asian broadcasts. League of Legends pretty much has a huge handle on those over in China. But at the same point, now in the U.S., NASCAR, one of those races, and I don't have the numbers in front of me, but I want to say NASCAR pulls in about, what do you say, 2 million viewers for a regular race? Any idea? I think it's like 2.1 million viewers.
They pull in too many too viewers many. is what it comes down to.
So let's say it's around 2 million. Chat can go ahead and fact check that for me. But 900,000 viewers here, John. This is like not quite half probably of the viewership of regular NASCAR, but a giant margin for their first online race.
Sorry, I was too busy interacting with chat. They're slamming my take on NASCAR at the moment.
Well, I know you're a huge NASCAR fan.
Oh, massive.
You love watching
huge.
People make left turns.
Best part about NASCAR is left
turns. You
can
watch it
turns.
For days. Oh. You love the smell of jet fuel.
Sign me up.
You like people in short jean shorts.
Joey,
I know that's a big thing.
You're talking to the guy who still has a NASCAR bed. I still have a bed with the race car behind, you know, all built around. That's how big of a NASCAR fan I am. That is a complete fabrication. I hate NASCAR. It drives me up a wall, and thank you to the Viking Bear, 2.92 million on average. I don't know if you said that or not. That explains a lot about me. It does. Thank you. It drives him up a wall. There you go. All these puns. Joey, you're normally the pun guy. I love and I hate this. I love it because it's great that video games are somewhat being accepted in this really awkward time in human history. With COVID-19 out there, with people desperate for almost any kind of entertainment, video games are being able to step up and fulfill a role, to fulfill a segment of what's almost become a necessity in human life, being a source of entertainment. And people are being open to it. Yeah, it's not 3 million people. It's not 3 million people that tune in for a regular NASCAR race, but 900,000 people watching virtual cars go in left circles. I just don't understand that. I don't understand how people can watch it in real life. I don't understand how people can watch it, you know, on a video game. But it's overall, it's good for video games. It's good for competitive esports. It's good because that's 900,000 more people now exposed to the world of video games, to the world of esports, to competitive gaming. And yeah, they're starting to see that, hey, maybe this might be a legitimate source of entertainment. Maybe this is something I can get behind. What if, you know, this opens their door? Like, hey, I really enjoy watching iNASCAR. or iRacing or eRacing or the John Deere 5000. Yeah, it takes only 2 hours because it's only like 800 left turns and you're doing it like times five speed on the video game. It's going around circles really, really quick. I would actually watch that. That'd be kind of fun. What if that opens the doorways and say, hey, look, you know, I'm a hockey fan. Maybe I want to give the Washington Capitals an opportunity, who is streaming virtual versions of their regular season games on NBC Sports Washington with the voice of the Washington Nationals, Joe Beninati and Craig Lachlan on play-by-play and color, calling a virtual hockey game. Maybe that's something I might be able to get into now because iRacing gave me the idea, yes, this is legitimate. This is something I can possibly watch. It's not going to take you 3 hours to watch a game. It's probably going to take you maybe an hour because there's a simulation that goes pretty quick. Maybe that's something you might be open-minded to now if you miss hockey. If you miss soccer, if you're a big soccer fan, EMLS or baseball. You know, something I've been doing, I'm a big baseball fan, is I've been doing a virtual season for the Washington Nationals playing games. Every day the Nationals are scheduled to play a game, I'm streaming a game online, playing the full nine innings to the best of my ability, and sometimes it's not that good. But it's a way for me to still watch and enjoy baseball and a way for other people to watch and enjoy baseball if they so choose to tune into my stream to watch it, to fill the gap until the world can go back to what we deemed was normal 2 months ago. So it's going to be interesting. So I'm glad iRacing is pulling in these numbers. I feel like it's going to help provide legitimacy to video games and the esports genre for entertainment. I think it's absolutely great, but at the same time, Joey, I want 900,000 viewers for the Capitol stream. I want 900,000 viewers for EMLS, for MLB The Show. I want that filling in, you know, for all of them, not just NASCAR. Yes, I understand NASCAR has a massive, massive audience, and I'm happy they almost hit 1 million viewers. I want them to hit 1 million. I want them to hit higher than a million. I would then want them to parlay that into other sports as well, virtually, until the world can get back to quote-unquote normal, if it ever does.
Well, and just keep in mind, too, this is purely the TV broadcast numbers.
Yes.
This does not include any online streaming, either done from a different platform, from Twitch, from YouTube, any of those. This is purely Fox Sports. So there could be a ton more viewers out there. It could be well over a million with a lot of the audience tuning in via Twitch as well. So that's another thing to keep in mind. You mentioned a few teams out there, the Capitals being one of them, the Wizards being another, the Trailblazers, I believe, being another one. We have a number of different sports simulations going on as well. We have some where it ends up being a computer versus computer matchup. This is the Washington Wizards versus whatever team they're playing on this night or what they would have been playing on the regular schedule as a full simulation, no players involved. Then we have other organizations, other teams out there. I believe the Trailblazers, where they have someone playing as the Trailblazers up against the CPU. And then we have some other leagues, like you mentioned, the EMLS, where we see two players, one from each organization, playing purely 1v1 against each other. So there's a lot of different ways that this is being played out as sports simulations. The purest, I guess you could say, is probably the ones where it's actually the CPU playing out based on the stats, because then you don't add in the variables of player skill, you don't add in mechanical variables, player knowledge variables, all of that involved. So it's interesting to see how different organizations and different leagues are approaching it overall. Now, back to NASCAR quickly. I don't want to spend a ton more time on this.
Neither do I.
But I have to ask, and I hate to do this. Of these 900,000 viewers on Fox Sports alone, do you think that many people actually knew this was a simulation? Because I think that's one of my worries. Like, the graphics in games have gotten so good. With players, like the NBA game, you can still tell they're still working on getting players to look exactly like the player. But with cars, it is much easier. Forza, a lot of those cars look as good, if not better, in real life. I have a feeling that some of these people who tuned in might not have known the difference. Am I wrong? Like, the graphics are so good in these games now.
No, the graphics are amazing. Don't get me wrong. NASCAR video games and racing video games have come a long way. And really, when it comes down to the realistic standpoint of it, yes, they're head over heels above everything else. If you watch Madden, you know it's a video game. Yeah, it kind of looks pretty cool, especially if you've been playing Madden since like 2000, 2001 versus nowadays. Yeah, it's absolutely fantastic. But NASCAR and just racing in general, it's so much easier. Like, I'm thinking like Gran Turismo, really a game that kind of led the way for racing for a while. Need for Speed, another one that had amazing graphics throughout the early 2000s that really kind of led the way for racing and graphics in those style of games. Now with NASCAR, yeah, there are some people, I would argue there are some people who didn't realize it. Guaranteed. Maybe they thought it was a little weird that, you know, some of these pro racers are talking and having a conversation with each other while racing, and it didn't sound like they're, you know, in the back of a jet engine of an airplane trying to talk on a radio like a trucker. You know, maybe that kind of threw them off a little bit. But at the end of the day, whether they realized it was real or not, they still found entertainment. And I think that's the biggest takeaway here, is that in a world that is completely shaken and shook and shooketh, if you will, of all over the place right now with COVID-19, if this for 1 hour, 2 hours, 3 hours provided a sense of relief or distraction from what's going on in the world and was able to make at least one person happy and one person smile, you know, I give NASCAR a load of crap 24/7. It's not for me, and I understand that. It's for someone else, though. And if that person is happy watching it, so be it. That's what they need right now. In a world that you turn on the TV and it's nothing but depression and death, I will take iRacing any day of the week if it brings at least one person being happy. And that's what we're seeing here. And I couldn't be more excited to see video games filling in that role for people.
Well, go ahead and sanitize those virtual cockpits and wheels, because we are moving on to streamers for charity. Twitch Stream Aid raised over $2.75 million this past weekend to go towards the COVID-19 Solitary Response Fund. And that is not all, John. We have Gamers Outreach, Gamers for Giving, raising over $650,000 and climbing, and that will be going to children in hospitals, similar to stuff we see with St. Jude as well. And then game companies for charity, there's a number of them out there, but one of the biggest ones being CD Projekt Red. They have donated $1 million to help fight against COVID-19 as well. Again, guys, we haven't highlighted every single charity stream out there. There are a lot of smaller organizations doing them as well as a number of big gaming companies and technology companies giving as well for the cause. But go ahead and give them some love. Be sure to check out Twitch. Be sure to check out Mixer, YouTube, Caffeine. There's a ton of charity streams running on the regular currently with this current crisis, so go ahead and check those out. If you feel comfortable supporting, do so. Moving into weekly esport leagues, John, Call of Duty League, there's been a lot of shooting, but they are just blanks because we have not heard a schedule update on that one. We'll have to wait and see, but Overwatch League action did return this past weekend. We had a ton of matches, and it was a poo-poo platter of Asian matches, really. it was just a wild variety. Like, this is a number of different matches that were originally scheduled through weeks 1 through 6, and now Overwatch League and Activision have decided to throw a variety of them together. I mean, to me, this is not a clean homestand. This is matches that have been moved online, and it's a wild variety of them. It's no longer these were the homestand matches that were supposed to take place. These are a bunch of teams that are way behind in the schedule that we need to start catching up. So we did have some North American teams play, but for the most part, it was a lot of those Asian teams that haven't played since last season trying to find their way back into the league standings.
Yeah, I mean, it was, we mentioned it last week, it's a total, and it goes over 3 days. It's actually still going on as we record this. I believe there should have been some Monday games. I may be mistaken. I believe last week I saw there were Monday games.
I think it's done. I think it was just Saturday and Sunday for Overwatch League.
Because I remember last week we said there's a total of 16.
And some of those may have been canceled. Some of those may have been canceled. The schedule is very fluid.
So there's only 10 listed here on the website. So looks like it did get cut down quite a bit there. But overall, it was a nice return. If you're a fan of one of the Asian teams out there for Overwatch League, it's nice to see these teams return. One of the big things I was looking at was Seoul Dynasty, a team that had high expectations in season one, kind of fizzled out after stage one, really struggled in season two. Season three, obviously, this is their first go around with the COVID-19 virus and everything really holding the league back. They came out with two strong 3-0s against both of the LA teams. Very strong performance there from Seoul Dynasty. But it's nice because things are starting to get back to normal as it's going to be for the next couple of months from what it sounds like. All these being played online. It's kind of turning the time back in esports history, 10, 15 years to more online and LAN versus LAN events because of just of how contagious this virus is. So it kind of makes sense we're doing this all online, but this is what fans need. And again, it provides that distraction people need from the world. And I'm really happy to see the Asian teams really start to get back into the groove here. And having Seoul Dynasty being my season one team, Really happy to see them get back off on a winning foot here, taking a two-game win, two-match win over LA Valiant and the Gladiators this past weekend.
Yeah, I think a few big takeaways for big Overwatch League fans out there. One, Asian teams are back, and everyone beats everyone, but in the end, Fnatic wins. I'm just kidding. That's League of Legends. But seriously, every team beat everyone over in Asia. Shanghai beat Guangzhou. Then Guangzhou ended up beating Spark. And then the Spark ended up beating Chengdu. And then Chengdu ended up losing or beating Shanghai. Like, it feels like every team was each other team's weakness. So a lot of the Chinese teams ended up pulling in a win, but then pulled a loss in against another Chinese team. I'm pretty sure they're all Chinese teams. They all went 1-1, but they're back in action. They're back getting that action going. Seoul Dynasty, John, you mentioned, they're very different than the original Seoul Dynasty. They look like the London Spitfire now. I mean, you have a lot of Spitfire players over there, Badozin being one of the bigger name ones in the support role. I think it's Gesture over there in the tank role, if I remember correctly. So Seoul has a lot of those championship-winning London Spitfire players from Season 1. I think they're going to be a very big team to watch. Personally, they're in my top three. I think they're going to be in a lot of people's top five because they're very talented. It just really depends on how the season gets going from here on there. San Francisco Shock, John. San Francisco, a team that is demolished in the match or two they've had so far this season. The Season 2 champions, they lost to both LA teams. And they not only lost, they got walloped. 3-1 to the Gladiators and 3-1 to the Valiant. Both of these were supposed to be very big, overwhelming San Francisco Shock wins. And I guess you can blame the delays. I guess there's a lot of different things that can be blamed here. But in the end, San Francisco goes home 0-2 from these weak matchups.
Yeah, it's kind of shocking seeing San Francisco kind of sputter out of the gates like that against the Gladiators.
Did you say shocking? Is that what I heard?
See, I didn't mean to do that. but thank you for calling me out. I appreciate that. I'm going to go. Natty Seltzer undefeated. There you go. Simple as that. Thank you, Chad. It's kind of surprising for San Francisco Shock here. Kind of sputtering out of the gate, like you said, Joey, going taking two losses to both of the LA teams. Kind of really does show you now, going back full circle here to the Seoul Dynasty, where they actually stand now. Because both LA teams, for the last two seasons and for the little bit that they played this year, have been playing pretty well. They've been mid-pack, maybe upper tier, most of the stages in the last two seasons. So they're not bad teams. And like you said, San Francisco Shock, the defending Season 2 champions, they're not a bad team. So I think that goes a long way to show how these teams have grown and really addressed in the offseason the personnel changes they need, the coaching changes they need to really be that upper tier team here in the Overwatch League. So I like it. It looks like the league's more competitive. It's not, these are obviously the top five teams. Everything in the middle is a crapshoot, and these are going to be your bottom feeders for the entire season. It feels like everything's a little bit more evened out and a lot more competitive this go around.
Absolutely. So keep an eye on that Overwatch League action. It does not look like they have the schedule up for next week from what I'm seeing. So I'll have to see how all that plays out, how all that is adjusted based on the worldwide calendar and availability, as well as obviously the developing COVID-19 virus. So we'll have to keep tuned for that one, as well as that CDL roster. But we do know what LEC and LCS playoffs look like. John, take us to those LEC final standings.
All right, Joey. So G2 Esports ended up in first place. So Fnatic was unable to take that away. Sorry. But hey, at least they're in second place. They're in a tie with Origin. 13-5 in second place. So Fnatic, at least you guys are in the playoffs. Congratulations. Mad Lions, 11-7 in fourth place. Misfits Gaming, 10-8 in fifth. Rogue Gaming sitting at a pretty 9-9 record. Seventh place, they call themselves Excel Esports, but they didn't really excel this go around. Schalke 04, more like Schalke 8th place, 6-12. SK Gaming in ninth place at 4-14. And hey, Team Vitality, 2-16. Good enough for last place. Good job, guys.
And then over to the playoff bracket, John. It doesn't look like they've updated it yet on the League of Legends website, but I just posted a link over on Gamepedia. They have kept up with it over on Gamepedia. It looks like it's going to play out in a 1-4 matchup with G2 up against Mad Lions to kick things off. Then we have Fnatic and Origin, those two tied place for second. It doesn't really matter to play a tiebreaker because they're both going to end up playing each other anyway as the second and third seed respectively. And then into the loser's bracket, we have Misfits up against Rogue. For the most part, I feel like I predicted a lot of this correctly. I only had two switches. and that was Mad Lions and Rogue. I thought Rogue would finish a little bit higher in that fourth seed with Mad Lions fighting it out with Excel for that sixth spot. Mad Lions did excel. They went mad toward the end of the season. They started popping off some victories, and that did carry them along. Looking at this bracket, though, there's a lot that we could predict, but for now, let's just predict the beginning matchups that we know. G2 up against Mad Lions.
G2, easy.
I think G2 is an easy call there as well. FNC Origin.
I kind of want to pick Origin just to smite you a little bit. But I do think Fnatic ends up taking this. I think it's going to be a closer matchup here, but I do think Fnatic takes it.
Yeah, I actually think Origin could have played a lot better, but they have looked very bad the last couple weeks. I don't know if it's the travel or maybe the suspension of travel, because they were a team that traveled from Berlin to Denmark here and there. They have looked very bad the last couple weeks. They've lost the teams they really shouldn't have. Because of that, instead of taking this five games, I actually think Fnatic wins out, and I think it could be a 3-0 or 3-1. Over to Misfits and Rogue. Misfits, a team that originally started out stacked with veterans last season. Now they have some veteran talent with a mix of that young talent, with Rogue being a very young talent-heavy team. Both extremely mechanically talented teams, but overall, who comes out in this first match of the loser's bracket on your end?
I'm going to give it to Misfits. I do like their youth on the team. I think they're not going to know any better. I don't think they are going to... I feel like they're going to understand the situation of the playoffs, but I feel like because not a lot of people are focusing on them, that there's not a lot of pressure on them. And I feel like that's going to be to their advantage. And I think they can take it from Rogue.
Both teams look terrible, if I'm being completely honest.
I'm trying to make a positive, make though. It. Let's be real.
I mean, if they could both tie and lose right here, I think it'd be best for both organizations, to be honest. Now, watch me get burned on that, and they end up going all the way. Yeah. I believe both teams have won, like, maybe one out of the last five matchups they've played. Neither team looks really good. When it comes down to raw talent, I really like the young potential of Rogue, but at the same point, Misfits with that veteran talent may be the anchor they need in the playoffs. So I'm going to go Misfits as well. I think it goes a full five games. If Rogue wins, I think it's due to Larson. I think Larson in the mid lane can really overcome Fevivin as a veteran, along with Inspired, who's been a very, very good jungler for this Rogue side, getting both Larson ahead as well as the top lane and Finn. Hansama, he's had a decent season, but if he can really hold it together up against the young players of Misfits, that could also be a big calling card for Rogue. But for now, I will go Misfits in a very close one. With that, John, let's head on over to North America to talk LCS before we wrap up the show. Ending the regular season standings, I believe these are completely up to date now on the website. I believe all matchups have been played. Tiebreakers are done. We had a fancy little tiebreaker for the last playoff spot. But for now, Cloud9 soaring high above the rest at 17-1. Evil Geniuses, they plotted all season long, and it finally paid off. They take the second seed, 11-8. 100 Thieves. John, it felt like all they were stealing was losses for the longest time, but they do end up in third in North American fashion, 11-9. FlyQuest planted a lot of trees this season, and it was enough to put them in playoffs at 10-9. TSM, Team Solo Mid, solo in fifth place. Golden Guardians, what a team. What a team. This is a team that so many people doubted, so many people put in 10th place. I had them right around 7th or 8th myself. I did not think they would make playoffs. They have made their way into playoffs. They did it through a ton of tiebreakers. They end up in 6th place, finalizing the last playoff spot at 9-10. $2.3 million in your top lane alone cannot buy Dignitas a playoff spot. They finish at 9-11 in that 7th spot. Immortals, they were immortal before, but now that they're back in the LCS, they are showing a lot of blood. They are sitting in 8th at 8-11. Team Liquid. Their standings have been very liquid this season, John, and they have been dripping downward down to the 9th spot. And Counter Logic Gaming, the only Logic they are countering is their own still at 3-15. A lot of changes need to come to that organization and team for them to step back up as we head into playoffs. 100 Thieves up against Cloud9 starts off round 1 with Golden Guardians and TSM sitting in the round 2 spots currently. That cannot be right, can it? Is that right? How is Golden Guardians getting a bye on this thing?
No. So I think the way we need to read this is...
Because that seems crazy.
I think the winner of the 100 Thieves and Cloud9 and FlyQuest and Evil Geniuses, the winner of those go on to the quarterfinals. The losers go on to round 2.
You are correct. Yes, the bracket on the LOL Esports website is all jacked up, ladies and gentlemen.
It's terrible.
The winner's bracket is going to be Cloud9 up against 100 Thieves. Feels like Cloud9 got 100 wins this split. Do you take them to move on?
Of course you take Cloud9 to move on. Let's be real here. Come on.
Cloud9 moves on. Probably a 3-0 or 3-1, in my opinion. Evil Geniuses FlyQuest. I think this could be a spicy matchup. FlyQuest was up toward the top for most of the season. Evil Geniuses really got their stuff going halfway through the spring split. I could see this one going either way. John, I'm going to turn it over to you for your first plotting of a thought here.
Yeah, so Evil Geniuses is definitely the hotter team. They're definitely on a rebound after a very, very slow start. A lot of people were memeing them throughout the LCS community. But they've really come on towards the end of the split. They have the momentum. FlyQuest is still a very strong team. I do see this one possibly going five. It could tilt either way. I'm actually going to go in favor of FlyQuest in this one. I do think it's going to go five games. I'm going to say 3-2 FlyQuest. But it's just one of those matchups where really, if FlyQuest is sleeping at a fight in one of the late games, whether it's game one, two, or three, or whatever, if they're not paying attention, if they're not fully committed, they make a bad mistake, they're not paying attention to objectives, they make stupid plays, they fall behind early, and they can't recover, I really think that one or two bad games will be enough to doom FlyQuest. But I'm still going to ride that horse for them. I think FlyQuest takes it 3-2.
I really want FlyQuest to win out, but I'm actually going to go EG here, and I think they take it 3-2. When it comes down to EG, I think you got to run the hotter team. FlyQuest, again, they've been planting these trees. They've been getting lots of kills. They've been looking like they can be a top-tier team, but they've also looked like a team that has been sunk way down below their trees that they've been planting as well. Evil Geniuses, on the other side, have felt like they've picked it up throughout the season. They developed that synergy. Jizuke has been popping. I think he's going to be enough to really rival Power of Evil in that mid lane, and I think that, as well as the jungle, could be the big difference for these teams. So I'm going to take EG, but again, John, I agree with you. I think it's going to be close. I think it goes five games, EG in five. Then over to the loser's bracket. We don't know who they'll be playing just yet, but we have TSM and Golden Guardians setting up those rooms over there. TSM obviously will play the team that is a little lower rated, with Golden Guardians in that sixth seed. They will play the team that has the highest rating coming out of those first two matchups. So it's going to be exciting to watch. If our predictions are right, they're a little different, so we can't really predict this next round. But keep an eye on that. The biggest story of any, well, two big stories. TSM won, making playoffs but not making it into the first round of playoffs in the winner's bracket. And then Golden Guardians, this miraculous run at the end, in really C9 fashion, finding their way into playoffs, having that chance at a big gauntlet run here for the spring split playoffs.
How dare you compare them to the glorious C9 gauntlet runs of past ages? That is, I am offended as a C9 fan.
Well, you can toss your bat in the next stream, John, because what's happening next?
Oh, was that a cue for... Oh.
Oh, that was a
cue. That was bad. Immediately following the Level Up podcast, I will be continuing the virtual MLB season on MLB The Show 20, Washington Nationals virtual season. I'm going to stream it here on OTN Live for this go-around. It's the first game against the Miami Marlins, so that's going to be pretty exciting. Just a quick recap, if you weren't paying attention to my personal stream, twitch.tv/fiasco. 3-game sweep of the Mets over the weekend for opening weekend. Very solid outings for the starting three pitchers for Scherzer, Strasburg, and Corbin. All three really getting over 11 strikeouts at least. Game one was a bit of a blowout. Games two and three was a little bit closer than it should have been. Definitely had to put in closers to finish those games out. But really exciting stuff. Just a way to kind of pass time until baseball season comes back. So definitely, if you're interested in watching virtual baseball with a unique twist on it, make sure you stay tuned. I'll be about 5-10 minutes after the Level Up podcast is over here on OTN_live for the Twitch channel here. And we'll kick off game one against the Marlins.
Absolutely. And with that, guys, I think that ends our show. As we go into the closing, keep an eye on that Overwatch League schedule. We will have matches most likely this next week, but they have not been announced just yet. LEC and LCS action will head on into playoffs very soon.
Well, Nation, that will do it for another episode of the Level Up Podcast. Before you go, head on over to patreon.com/OTN and consider becoming a part of the Overtime Network. In return, you will get access to exclusive content that nobody else in the world can get, unless they are a part of the Overtime Network. If you enjoy listening to the Level Up Podcast, let us know. Leave us a review on Spotify, Stitcher, iTunes, and/or Google Play. We would love to hear from you. In fact, we love to hear from our listeners so much, we have other ways for you to interact with us. Joey, where else can the Level Up Nation go to interact with us and the show?
Listeners, head on over to Instagram, Twitter, and or Facebook and find us at the Level Up Podcast. That is the LVLUP Podcast. In addition to that, we stream regularly on Twitch, twitch.tv/OTN_live. Catch this show Monday nights around 7:15 p.m. Eastern Time. Catch John's baseball streams as well as he plays out the Nats virtual season and much more.
All right, make sure you tune in next week as we cover the latest and greatest in gaming and esports news. Do your ears a favor. Hit that subscribe button to know when the next episode of Level Up Podcast is ready for your listening pleasures. We will catch you all next week. Remember, be nice to your fellow gamers online. And as always,
level up.
And we're out.